honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to visit with a resilient veteran I've known for years, but until now had never had the privilege of hearing his whole story. Sam Banuelos, 92 years old, of Fresno, California, a lifelong resident of the San Joaquin Valley. He grew up performing just about every kind of agricultural work imaginable as the oldest of 10 children in his Mexican-American family. Drafted into the Army in 1950, he headed to Korea the following year and eventually was captured as part of an ambush that killed four men from his unit. Sam spent almost 2 years as a prisoner of Chinese forces. And I don't think I've asked you yet, Sam, how would you describe the way you felt about your captors?
I didn't hate them. I didn't hate anybody, but I didn't trust them. I already had an attitude before that they were very intelligent people. You know, so I kind of was a little leery, you know, on their nearness. No, I didn't trust them.
And, you know, we obviously have to talk about your liberation, but before we get to that, I'm curious, too, because you talked about how much you like to read. Well, let me ask you that first. Was there anything that you read in captivity that was especially impactful for you?
Well, no, what happened was in the summertime of 52, they started bringing books, even to the point where they made a space for a library. Mm-hmm. Then the guys could go in, you know. Not many guys did, just the only one fellow. He was in charge of the library, was the only one that read. But I would read the newspapers, just about that, you know.
But I know, you know, since then, it's been 70 years now since you were liberated. And I know that you've learned a lot about other prisoners' experiences and even the contrast between guys who ended up as prisoners of the Koreans versus prisoners of the Chinese. Oh, yeah. Like you were? Yeah. Is there some perspective you have now that you didn't have then?
You know, I knew two fellows that had stayed over there. I think one was from New York and the other one was from Minnesota, you know. And the younger one, I mean, he told me one time that he wanted to go, but he not because I believe the system, but because he wanted to see what it was like. You know, he wanted to experience what were those people like, what was their lifestyle, what was their system. That was the one from New York. I mean, he's the one that stayed. The other fellow, I didn't know him well. He helped me one time because I became sick because I drank the cold water, the contaminated water, and I got sick. And then so he was the one that dragged me to the, I was real sick. And the doctor gave me a piece of opium, crushed opium. And that stopped my infection right away. You know?
How do you think your experience would have been different if you had been held by the Koreans and not the Chinese?
I probably wouldn't be here with the Koreans. Because from the beginning, they demonstrated a lot of cruelty and atrocities. That's what I heard in the news and read in the newspapers. Yeah. They went from the extremes in their interest of trying to save the country. They showed that cruelty and then humane treatment. There was a fellow named Aguilar. He had been a prisoner of the Koreans, and he did get to see some of the cruelty that the Koreans practiced. Yeah, he was a tank driver. But then because he learned how to speak Chinese, he had been in the Marine Corps, he learned how to speak Chinese, so he was able to swip over to the Chinese. And then he said he did see cruelty. But the Chinese, like I said, they emphasized that they had the humanitarian treatment. And they said that they're referring to it with the things they tried to give us and all that. They had the human treatment, that's why they did it. And so that was the difference right there.
So you didn't have to read about it in a book. You had this fellow prisoner who had been captured by the Koreans but then transferred to the Chinese. And he told you specifically some of the things that had been done?
Oh, yes. Yes, he was from Chula Vista. You know, he and his buddy, I think his name was Paul Gray from Minnesota. They did so. They did see that.
And I know it's not easy to talk about, but just for our understanding, is there something you can share that he told you that they had done that kind of gave an example of how bad it was?
Well, he said one of the times they were moved in the train and they put the train inside a cave to prevent the airplanes to strafe them. So they were there, but some of them felt suffocated because of the smoke of the engine. And that's what he said. They didn't move the train until they knew that the planes were gone. He did see a few things involved cruelty. Yeah. But like I said, the Chinese had a different policy because of the propaganda purposes.
Right.
Yeah, that's why they referred it every minute.
Do you remember how much weight you lost from the time you became a prisoner to the time you got out?
I think I lost about 46 pounds. Yeah, 46 pounds. I was a little thinner than now. Yeah.
What would you say was the hardest or worst or most challenging thing that you had to deal with?
Over there? I noticed, now I remember, you know, I started becoming more solitary. You know, not anti-social, but just wanted to be kind of like myself. I used to chase a ball almost all day. It was just to pass time away. That was my activity mainly. I'd just go, maybe just go to sleep and then just relax, you know, and think about maybe coming back someday. That was about it. I didn't lose hope, though.
Didn't lose hope, yeah. And eventually, those hopes were fulfilled when you got to taste freedom again. Can you tell us a story of what led up to that and how you experienced that realization of, hey, I have my freedom back?
In the first exchange, there was a first exchange in 53 in April. The second wounded, there was a fellow in that group that told my family, you know, when he came back, he searched my family and he told them that I was a POW. They knew it already, but he said I was all right, you know. He went over and he told them that he was all right. I got sick with pleurisy. I was in that hospital. It wasn't a modern hospital. It was just a building, like a warehouse, you know, and we made it a hospital. So they took me in, and then the doctor, he punctured my side to get the fluid out of the infection area, you know, and from there I just waited. And when I heard the news about July, you know, that there were going to be an armistice, that raised my whole fire, you know. I thank God. I think we're going to go. That's what I believe. I'm sure it was my mother's prayer that brought me back. That's what I believe. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, everybody's listening, and maybe they noticed some of the things I noticed here. There are some things that might be big deals to the rest of us that don't seem like they're a big deal to you. You were shot in the toe, and you're marching all that way and running away with that. And then you drink contaminated water. Yeah. You lose 46 pounds. You're a 22, 23-year-old at this point. You've got pleurisy. They have to puncture you to drain the fluid. Mm-hmm. I mean, did you ever think that you weren't going to make it out, that you were going to die over there?
No, I didn't think that.
Why not?
Like I said, you know, I believe in God. And He's going to help me.
Yeah.
That's the way I believe. That's what we were taught. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I believe still.
And so you were in the hospital still when you find out that you're going to go home?
Oh, yes. I didn't come home right away. I was sent to San Diego, and they almost cleansed. My body was cleansed. I had some kind of infection. And then they sent me to Fitzsimmons Army Hospital, and I was had surgery on my side. My side was cleaned, and then they sent me to the Livermore, VA Hospital in Livermore. And from there, I went home. And I thank God for that.
Yeah. And when did you finally get to see your family again, and what was that moment like?
There was only one time when I first returned. In November 53, the Thanksgiving day, I was home with my family that day, but only they gave me a 3-day leave from San Diego. And then from there, I had to go to Fitzsimmons Army Hospital. And then they sent me there to Livermore, to the VA Hospital Livermore. And from there, I was released to go home.
So, but you got to spend Thanksgiving with your family?
Oh, yes, that year, yes.
Did your mom have any frijoles for you?
Oh, yes, everything. I was very happy to be home.
And we've all experienced Thanksgiving, and I think a lot of us take some time on that day to give thanks and give voice to some of the things that we're thankful for. What do you think you were most thankful for on that Thanksgiving, 1953?
Oh, the return of my family. The return to my family, my country. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I know that, you know, that experience, and those were what should be the best years of your life, right? I mean, that age, that's the prime of life. Maybe it's hard to put into words, but can you give us maybe a little taste of how that experience has shaped the rest of your life? Maybe the perspective it gave you or the things that you do or think as a result of it?
Well, I realized that I had to try to obtain more education, to go to school and, you know, learn a skill. And there was potential in me. I realized that there was potential in me because I always liked to read, you know, and practice arithmetic, so I wanted to pursue a career, but because of my limits placed me in the position that I had to look for employment wherever I could, then I still tried to get a better position, earning power. So I went and passed a test for the post office, and I passed a test for the post office. And then I got a job with the post office. And then later on, I passed a test for the Bureau of Reclamation. I went to work for them for 16 years, you know. I always try to improve my lot, you know, so I can protect my family. That's the life story right there.
You know, the story that you've told us, there's an underlying theme to it that most of us have not experienced. There's everybody in this room values freedom and understands that there's a price that's paid for it. But what's your perspective on freedom and that concept, having lived 2 years without it?
Freedom is essential. And on our living, freedom is essential. And of course, freedom has a price. Many men have paid the price. But to me, the most essential thing in our freedom is to practice, for us to practice civic responsibility. See, we speak to our representatives, our needs, our concerns. We help them to perhaps help our country more, find out ways to help our country better. And that's the way I believe, you know. I used to visit once in a while one of the senators. I tell him, you know, I think we can help the country more. You know, more education for our young people.
I know that a few years ago now, you got to go on the honor flight to Washington, D.C.
Oh, yes.
What were the parts of that experience that were meaningful to you?
The whole trip is meaningful to me. The whole trip, yes.
Was there a moment anywhere there that made you reflect on the guys who didn't come home from Korea and so many who are still there, who've never been recovered?
Yes, yes. I was very fortunate to have had that experience. Yes.
What should the rest of us understand about all those guys you served with, the guys you were in captivity with, a whole generation of veterans whose war is referred to as the Forgotten War? What should we remember so we don't forget?
I'm going to give my opinion. I think in the history classes in the schools, that subject should be more emphasis on the schools. When they teach the children, you know, the true history and what happened there, so they can appreciate the freedom that all our country has. All the men in our country have died for. That's what I think.
Well, there's one question I always try to remember to ask, and I also can't forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us this story, that you're the only one who could tell us this story. Is there something when you think back on all of it, your service to our country, but also just 92 years on this planet, is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
Well, I'm proud of our country and what it's done. And what it's doing to try to help the world to be a better place. I continuously think that we can talk to our politicians, to our representatives, and to our senators, and all our politicians, to be more alert to the needs of the people. And of course, we should honor all our men, wherever they served, whenever they served, you know, for the service they have performed. That's what I think.
I'm remembering, tell me if I'm misremembering, but didn't you have another story where you guys had some planes that were coming at you and you almost got killed?
Yeah. Yes, there was this situation where a few days later I had been caught. These two planes went over this area and there was an anti-aircraft gun firing at one of them and he missed it. The other fellow, the one that followed also, they fired at him, they also missed him. But the first one that came in, he bombed. He had bombed that position, and then he took off. Then the other one came again, and that one strafed the road, which was carrying, the Chinese were moving a lot of supply with mule teams, with mule carts, and they killed a lot of Chinese. Then, of course, he also bombed again the aircraft, and then they took off. There was a bird like, oh, well, they had one of their shells hit that tree where I was sitting under, and then that limb just came over, almost hit me right in the head. I really got scared with it. But I was lucky. You were lucky.
Just one more example of why this 92-year-old veteran maintains an attitude of gratitude, the kind that rubs off on just about everybody he meets. Don't forget to look up those photos of Sam Banuelos online at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And thanks again to facilitator John Klein and all the amazing veterans at the Stories of Service class at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District in Clovis, California. They allowed us to pretty much take over the class and record Sam's story there, so we appreciate that. Go join them if you're a listener in that part of the country. They're there every Monday morning at 9. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll also join us again next time here on Hometown Heroes, when we'll be reminded once more of something Sam Banuelos' prisoner of war story made abundantly clear today. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.